Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Mimiverse Monthly Audiocast. I am your host, writer-director Christopher R. Mim, and as always, I need to ask, are you there? Are you listening? Are you psychically receiving me? Tell me, what am I thinking? Because I don't know, because my head is a jumble these days. I'm so damn busy. The Mimiverse is a busy place, and I'm going to jump right into exactly why and how, and why that should excite you if you're a fan of my films. First and foremost, I'm working on lots and lots of cool, fun stuff. First, and probably most importantly, the Mimiverse Holiday Special is done. I'm at the stage now where it's all been edited. I do have to add one little thing to it, which I will get done early next week. I'm recording this here end of August 2021, and next week, roughly, I'll get that one little thing done, and then it'll be done. It's not going to negatively affect the release of it at all. It's kind of an extra thing that maybe doesn't even need to be in it, but I want to do it, so I'm going to try and get it. If I can't, and it just falls through, then it falls through and I'll just release it as is and I'll be happy. So I'm working on that. That's all edited. I could literally release it tomorrow, except it's not the holiday season yet. It's still only September. It's still the third quarter. We haven't reached fourth quarter yet. I still need to finish the authoring of the DVD and the Blu-ray and make a poster. It'll be available online to watch when it comes out on Thanksgiving Day, but no trailer. For one, I hate cutting trailers. It's so hard to boil a film or a project like this down into a quick little 60-second thing without giving too much away, but at the same time trying to entice you to watch it. At this point, I figure the Mimiverse Holiday Special is so niche that it's really just for the fans, and if you're not already aware of the Mimiverse, you probably aren't going to watch it, right? I think the only people that are truly, truly excited about it are already fans. And so I don't know that I need to tease much. Plus, it's only 35 minutes long with credits and extras. And so there's not a lot I can tease. It's not like a film where I have 80, 90 minutes of content to pull from. There's a lot in there that I want people to experience as they watch it for that first time and unwrap it like a Christmas gift. You're just going to have to take my word for it that it's going to be good and then watch it when it comes out. So I'm very deep in that, getting that done. I'm basically feeling like I never have enough time for everything I'm trying to do. I released The Phantom Like Kids and The Beast Walks Among Us, and it's gotten a lot of great reviews. The DVD and Blu-ray are now officially available, and I've sent out all of the pre-orders and all the contributor swag, so watch your mailbox if you contributed or pre-ordered if you haven't gotten your copies yet, or your certificate. It's coming. You'll get it very, very soon. So pay attention. Watch your mail. Make sure that guy two apartments down doesn't steal your stuff, because that happens. Don't leave your packages out on your front steps. They're package thieves, and they're terrible, terrible people, and they are all going to hell. If there is a hell, there's definitely a section in there for package thieves. And they're going there, but they still do it in the world in which we live now, so be paying attention if you haven't gotten your stuff yet. Particularly if you're listening to this overseas, there's a whole thing that has to happen with customs, and, you know, it takes time. Not too long ago, I sent a package to Australia, and it didn't get there for 2.5 months. And then I sent one a week after that one, but that one got there in 10 days. So you never know. If you're just waiting on it, just wait. If you don't get it, say by October, let me know. Also, I realize that there exists the possibility with some of you folks that since you may have contributed as far back as early 2019 or even pre-ordered over a year and a half ago, your addresses may have changed. And I went off the most recent stuff I could find, and it sounds like of the people who I know have gotten it, they got their stuff, so their addresses hadn't changed, or they had forwarded, or whatever. But if your address has changed in the last 2.5 years, and you don't get something, it should come back to me, and if I get anything back to me, I will contact you directly and let you know and see if I can get it out to you. I will do everything in my power to make sure that you get everything that is coming to you, because if you gave me $20 to make a movie and you expect to have your DVD in your hands, I want you to have that DVD in your hands and I want you to watch the movie and enjoy it. That's the transaction between you and I. That is the point of me saying, hey, give me money. It's to make movies so that you can watch them, and you are making that possible. So if you do not get anything you think you are owed, get a hold of me sometime in October, maybe even end of September if you just live in Wisconsin or whatever, and let me know if there's any issue. But that all has gone out, so that has kept me rather busy. There were a lot of contributors and a lot of pre-orders on that movie. And let me just say, the shipping costs of all that were in excess of $650. And you may think, wow, that seems excessive. It's not. That's just how much stuff actually went out. And normally, a lot of this would have been spread over time because I wouldn't have gotten so many pre-orders. There still would have been a crush of contributors getting their stuff, but DVD and Blu-ray pre-orders wouldn't be so insane. I mean, that's like a year and a half's worth of DVD and Blu-ray pre-orders that normally would have just been orders over that same stretch of time. So I'm excited that we're at that stage where we're doing this weird tiered release with The Beast Walks Among Us. We did the digital release, which went really well. I'm glad so many of you out there took advantage to watch it. I hope you enjoy it on Blu-ray and DVD when you get a chance. And given enough time, it'll end up on the Roku channel, of which The Family Kids and the Unseen Invasion is now available on the Roku channel. I'm kind of looking at it from a Hollywood perspective a little bit. They're in flux, too, and trying to figure out how this all works with this damn pandemic. But Hollywood will release a movie in theaters for a period of time, and then it goes to home video, and then it goes to, quote-unquote, free streaming. So I decided to try a different release schedule with it still being really difficult to do live events, of which I have some news on that shortly. But anyway, so I tried to do this tiered release with The Beast Walks Among Us doing a digital-only release, which worked out pretty well. It really did. The people who really wanted to see it were able to see it. And now it's the physical media release, and given maybe by New Year's, the holiday season, I may put The Beast Walks Among Us on the Roku channel for everybody to watch. I don't know. It's a little weird because the whole profit structure of all this has changed so much in the last 5 years. It's all shifted around. So I always have to be on my toes to make it work. So there's that. Now, I just mentioned that there's some news on the in-person live events front, in particular regarding the Family Kids. I had mentioned in a previous episode when I talked about doing a tiered release like this, that we would do the digital release of Beast Walks Among Us, then there'd be a physical media release, and then sometime around this time, there would be an in-theater event. Well, given the state of everything, I don't see that happening anytime soon. I just do not feel safe doing a big event. And there's so much bull crap around vaccines and masking and all this stuff. Part of me just doesn't want to deal with it, because I would honestly only really feel safe by requiring people to be vaccinated to attend my premiere. The problem is I don't know if I'm necessarily legally allowed to do that. And I also kind of don't want to piss people off, although I do think getting vaccinated is very important. And if you haven't yet, you really should. But then again, given the way the Delta variant is going insane right now, would that even matter? Would there still be the possibility of my premiere becoming some sort of super spreader event? If I'm being honest, I don't even want to think about the possibility of being responsible for something like that, simply to watch some movies in a theater when people can watch them in the safety of their home. So as of right now, I have not made any definitive plans to do an in-theater event. Honestly, if people out there listening, you folks out there listening, want an in-theater event and you feel safe doing it, send me a message at stuforia.com and let me know you're interested in actually doing a live event. I just kind of feel like as we head into winter and the stupid COVID numbers are going right back up, I don't know that it's the smartest thing right now. And it's disappointing, because if I would have known Queen of Snakes was going to be the last premiere for as long as we've not done them, I probably would have done something up a little bigger. But of course, at that time, I figured everything would be fine. And I was so excited, because after 3 years of having my premieres pushed into the fall, I was so excited to get back to the spring, because the spring was always our sweet spot. We figured that out. And the only reason we ended up in the fall anyway was because we did the 10th anniversary Monster Phantom Lake, the musical over the summer and all this stuff. And it just pushed everything back by about 6 months. And then when I was able to shoot Guns of the Apocalypse and Queen of Snakes at the same time, it gave me the freedom to get Queen of Snakes done a little faster after releasing Guns of the Apocalypse in the fall, because I had it already shot. See, actually shooting the movies takes a lot of time and effort and energy, and there's only so much you can do while you're doing it. So not having to worry about shooting a movie after releasing Guns of the Apocalypse and just having all that footage and all I have to do is edit it together, I kicked its butt and I got it out in the spring. So we were back on schedule, and then, well, you know what happened. But everyone's lives have been turned upside down, so don't play any small violins for me. I feel grateful for where I'm at and how things are going, and to have my health, knock on wood, and my family's health. I mean, it could always be worse. So unfortunately, I just don't feel particularly comfortable right now to do a live event. That's just going to have to be put on hold, or we're just going to have to think about what happens going forward. I mean, it's all just going to really depend on where we're at and where everything is and what's happening. And unfortunately, we're all learning to have to be flexible. And some of us are not being flexible. And that's part of one of the greater issues we're dealing with as a society. But that's not the discussion I want to have right now. So as of right now, it's off. And maybe things will actually become good. And next spring, perhaps, we can have a full week's worth of events leading up to, well, the other project we're working on, perhaps the premiere of the next Phantom Lake Kids movie, The Phantom Lake Kids in the Day the Earth Abruptly Almost Ended. I have been working so hard on that movie. We have spent all summer shooting the damn thing. Originally, and this is funny, originally the schedule had us finishing on July 19th. Well, here we are. It's the end of August, almost September, when I'm recording this, and we're not done, because things happen, life gets in the way. We shot 95% of the movie outside, and there's some weather that just made it impossible. There's some heat. I'm sure you've experienced some heat this past summer. Some just unbearably hot days, some humid days, some rainy days. I mean, just days when we were supposed to shoot just didn't work out. Or we got down there and we just didn't get as much done as we needed to. Because here's the thing, we have to drive like a half hour to shoot anything. And sometimes you get out there, you're shooting stuff, and you don't get as much done as you hoped you would. And we had to pack it up and come back another day, which moved things around. And that's okay. That is way more than okay, because that is how it works. That always happens. I've never, ever, 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 ever finished a movie when I was quote-unquote supposed to, based on the first schedule. In fact, and I've talked about this before, it was a scheduling issue that caused That Which Lurks in the Dark, the movie that apparently will never get made. That's just what it feels like. Maybe it will. We'll see. The first time we tried to shoot it, it was scheduling conflicts that led to it being shut down. Perhaps it's fate. Perhaps everything just works out the way it's supposed to, right? Because if the scheduling conflicts hadn't happened the way they did, I never would have made The Phantom Lake Kids and The Beast Walks Among Us, which was my backup plan after That Which Lurks in the Dark fell through. And without The Beast Walks Among Us, I don't think I could have written the last two Phantom Lake Kids scripts, The Unseen Invasion and The Day the Earth Abruptly Almost Ended. I don't think I could have written those. The thing is like the first true Phantom Lake Kids movie, The Beast Walks Among Us, is a big movie. It's a big celebration of the Mimiverse and 15 years of all my movies, right? Without that, you really don't have The Unseen Invasion. You don't have The Day the Earth Abruptly Almost Ended. And those two movies are built around some of the familiarity you get with the characters. And this is where it gets a little weird with The Unseen Invasion, because The Beast Walks Among Us was supposed to come out first, which would introduce you to these characters deeper than they ever were in Danny Johnson Saves the World. But it would also make you fall in love with them the way that I know you have. And if you haven't, what's wrong with you? No, but seriously, to do a follow-up like The Unseen Invasion, which is a very small movie that was necessary because of the shutdown and COVID, you already sort of love these characters, or you're like into their vibe. And so you watch The Unseen Invasion and you're like, yeah, I dig these characters. And then when you get to the new one, the one we're finishing up, which we should have done within a couple weeks, there's running gags that run through them all. I mean, this is the first time I've ever done true sequels that are, it's a trilogy. They all fit together. So you can watch them all together and it becomes sort of one big story. And you have running gags from the first movie that carry through all the way to the third one. And there's jokes and all these things that carry over with the characters. It's meant to sort of be binge watched, which is, you know, a very modern way of watching movies and TV. It's weird because perhaps it was some sort of fate. It's kismet that which lurks in the dark fell apart so that I could make The Beast Walks Among Us, which would allow me to make The Unseen Invasion. Because if I just did The Unseen Invasion without The Beast Walks Among Us, I don't even know that I would know the characters well enough to write that script. And I don't know that The Unseen Invasion is the best movie I ever made, but I'll tell you what, it's one of the best movies I've ever made under stress because of a worldwide pandemic. Given the conditions at that time, there was nothing else I could have made other than that movie, but I needed the foundation of The Beast Walks Among Us, which was only possible because That Which Lurks in the Dark fell through due to scheduling. So that was a long way of saying, scheduling is insane, and you make the best of it, and it always gets messed up, and eventually, hopefully, knock on wood again, hopefully, everything will work out. I'll finish it up. We'll have a nice, new, fun, exciting adventure to enjoy next spring. And maybe this stupid pandemic thing will be behind us, or perhaps way more under control to the point that we're all going back to the movies and we'll all feel comfortable doing it. And we can have a week of Phantom Light Kids events, or several nights, or maybe we do a two-night event where we do that double feature screening we've been talking about of the first two, and then we have the premiere the next day of the new one. Who knows? Point is, I don't know. It is what it is. And again, we must be flexible and roll with it because this is the world in which we live. So I'm busy as heck working on all these projects. And when I have the smallest bit of downtime, which is not very often, but when I do, I'm still trying to get Butch vs. Evil, my video game, done. I really bit off more than I can chew, but I am pig-headed and determined that I'm going to get it done and out to you. It won't be until next year, I'll be honest. But now that The Beast Walks Among Us is completely out of my hands, and the holiday special will be wrapped up here very, very soon, and we'll be done shooting this new Phantom Light Kids movie, I can get back to working on that much more than I have in far too long. Maybe I can even get that out there so people can play it. I have had a few people play it, test it. Dr. Bob Tesla tried it. He seemed to have fun with it. He got to test it out here. He was here when numbers were crazy low and we all thought everything was going to be great. He stopped by and he got to watch The Beast Walks Among Us in my backyard. We did a little outdoor movie. It was great to see him after so long and to watch the movie, and he seemed to really enjoy it. And then I let him try the game, which he also seemed to enjoy. So that was cool. So that's what's going on in the Mimiverse. We're heading into the holiday season, back to school time. Good luck out there, students. Kind of seems like you're going to need it this year. And then we'll be moving into Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, the big holidays, New Year's. It's going to be interesting again. So yes, I'm extremely busy. And I've been working very hard for the last several months and will be for the next several months, but that's okay. I need work to keep me busy. I need things to distract me from the crazy that is the world. And even though sometimes I get a little crazy with all the work, I don't know what to do with myself when I'm not creating something. I'm not working. I don't know what to do. So I constantly come up with all these ideas and things, and I'd like to thank you for supporting them and keeping them alive. I'd like to continue to keep them alive. And here comes the pitch that I always have to give. Without fine folks like yourself contributing to the Mimiverse, it doesn't happen. Right now, the only thing you can contribute to is the new film, The Phantom Light Kids, In the Day the Earth Abruptly Almost Ended. And you can do so at SaintEuphoria.com. If you can't remember that, go to thegiantspider.com, poke around a little bit, you'll eventually find that film and where to contribute. Otherwise, again, saint euphoria.com. Check it out, maybe buy some stuff. Like I said, the DVD of The Beast Walks Among Us is available. If you order it now, you will literally get it within a few days, unless you live in Australia. Then it might take 2.5 months. We don't know. Overseas, it takes a while. In the United States, it should only take a few days. Order it, you'll get it. Beyond renting it on Vimeo, which you can still do and will continue to be able to do, and the price has come down, and you can now rent to own, if you're one of those people that likes to own things digitally, on Vimeo.com, or you can buy the physical media. As of right now, that's really the only places to watch it, and like I said, maybe by the end of the year, it'll be on the Roku channel. We shall see. There's a lot of stuff coming out. There's a lot of stuff happening. Just stay tuned. That's what's going on in the Mimiverse. So, without further ado, I have learned that the biggest reason lately people seem to be coming back month after month to listen to this audio cast is the oral history of the Mimiverse. I've got a lot of messages about that, and people seem to really like it. So, I'm just going to get to it. But before I do, I just want to remind you that after this month's edition of An Oral History of the Mimiverse, we have another Atomic Tales. But for now, let's jump right into this month's edition of An Oral History of the Mimiverse. Welcome back to An Oral History of the Mimiverse. Last month, we ended on the premiere of The Monster Phantom Lake and how well it went. And I sort of teased the reaction that I was not expecting. See, we did the premiere of The Monster Phantom Lake, and it went really well. We had a great time. Lots of people showed up. They laughed in the right spots. We had a mind-blowing experience doing it. After that came a rather crazy time in my life that I wasn't expecting. First, I started sending out to a bunch of film festivals. And I talked a little about film festivals last month and how they're kind of a scam because you had to pay an entry fee to get people to even look at your movie. And if they didn't like it, oh well, you're out the entry fee. If they did, they'd show it in the festival. Well, after I released it and suddenly was getting all this decent press, I started sending out to a lot of different blogs and online reviewers, and the reaction was quite positive. So it started getting a little reputation for being, as one reviewer said, the little movie that could. Because I think, looking back at this cheesy little movie I made, it shouldn't have worked, but it did. And I think what made it work was that it was meant to be an homage to those cheesy old movies that people often call good bad movies, which is not a bad thing. Mr. Lobo, who is a horror host, has the best line for this. It's not that those movies are bad, it's that they're misunderstood. And that's kind of the way I look at them. I don't think of those good bad old movies as bad. I often think of them as examples of the creators trying too hard and failing. But the thing is that they fail so spectacularly that it becomes something else, becomes something beautiful. And that spectacular failure is the difference between an honest, good, bad movie and something cynical. There are a lot of people out there who like to spoof these old movies and make fun of them because they think what's amazing about them is that they're bad. But that's not it. So if you're cynically trying to create something that's terrible, you're just going to fail, but not in a good way. It becomes sarcastic or spoofy. Though that has its place, it's not what I was going for. I wanted to create something that set that mood, and I continue to want to create that mood of authenticity to that genre. I don't know how to put it necessarily. It's hard sometimes for me to articulate this. But there's an earnestness to some of those old movies where you know the people making it were trying so hard to make a great movie and probably didn't have the talent or the resources to do it. And so what they end up with becomes kind of, again, something beautiful. It's like community theater. It's as good as we got, man, and we try. And this is what it is. Take it or leave it for what it is. Either enjoy it as it is or get snooty about it and walk out. It's up to you. But the point is like the best good, bad old movies were the ones that felt innocently earnest, that you could tell that the people making them really, really wanted to say something. They wanted to create something. They wanted to release something. And maybe in the backs of their minds, they thought that they were doing something that was award-winning. And it wasn't until you see the final results that you're like, that is not it. Here's a good example of something modern that's the same. You see all that stuff, the Nailed It memes, right? And there's that cooking show, Nailed It, on, I think, Netflix, that, you know, has home bakers trying to recreate a master cake maker's design. I personally love that stuff, and a lot of people love that stuff, not because we're making fun of the complete disasters, you know, what these people end up with that's supposed to be like the one they saw. It's that they tried really hard, and that's what they ended up with. So you're not laughing at them. You're laughing at the sort of fun of trying to shoot for the stars and jumping about 4 feet. I mean, that's really what it is. Even though you're really, really trying to get to the stars, damn it. But really the best you can do is maybe 6 feet on a good day, maybe eight. But you really try. And you never know until you try. And that's the beauty of it. That's what draws me into these kinds of movies. So one of the things that I think started coming through, in particular with The Monster of Phantom Lake, is that I really, really tried to make a great movie. Sure, it was cheesy. Sure, it was supposed to be a period piece. And yes, the monster was cheap. But I really tried. And I had no real clue what I was doing. I think the combination of the fact that I really tried to make a movie that was good, that quote-unquote failed spectacularly, made it kind of the beautiful thing that it is. I really tried to make something award-winning, and amazingly, it has won awards, but I really tried to make something great. And I think one of the pluses of making that kind of movie is that people saw it for what it is. It's supposed to be a cheesy 50s movie, right? It's supposed to be a low-budget, drive-in American International Pictures kind of thing. But because I didn't actually know what I was doing, while I was trying to pay homage to it, I was succeeding in unwittingly creating the same thing I was trying to pay homage to without actually trying to. I hope this makes sense. I keep trying to figure out a way to make this simple, but I think if you're listening to this and you know the Monster Phantom Lake, maybe you know what I mean. It's that there's an honest earnestness to how that movie turned out, and reviewers seem to get that. And yes, it got knocked for being too long. And admittedly, for that kind of movie, it is. It should be about 20 minutes shorter, maybe even more. And I think now, given all the time since then and all the movies I've made, I would do a much better job of cutting it down to something better. But I'm not going to George Lucas my stuff and go back and recut it. There will be no director's cut because I cut my own movies, which means they're always director's cuts. And maybe that means that I should have someone else cut them, but I don't trust anyone else to do justice to what it is I want to do. Plus, I really like editing, so stop suggesting it, whoever you are. Not that anyone is. I'm talking to myself. Anyway, so we released the movie. We had the premiere. It was great, and all these people had fun, and suddenly we're getting all these good reviews, and suddenly the number of acceptances we had at film festivals started to rise, and suddenly it starts playing all over the place, and it starts getting noticed. And in this process, two very interesting things happen. The first one is probably the thing that cemented my wish to continue to make movies forever. When the movie was playing all these different places, I told you how the guy who owns The Heights at the time did not have a digital projector. So he had to put a projector in the theater, and then we had to rope off, you know, the front row so people wouldn't be in front of the projector. Digital projection in 2006 really wasn't a thing. I mean, it was, but it wasn't super common, especially in smaller theaters. One of the things that was kind of funny is that I mentioned how the film festivals didn't really bite all at once. It was sort of a slow trickle. Well, right after we released it, it really wasn't getting a lot of traction, and I'd gotten a lot of rejections, and I'd spent a lot of money. And so I got a little bitter and I got crazy ideas, as I'm wont to do. And I talked to Josh Craig about the idea of doing our own film festival. If all these film festivals were going to take my money and not show my movie, well, we should throw our own, show this movie, and maybe get some other people who have been rejected by other film festivals too. We should create a film festival. Josh was like, sure, what do you think? And I was like, let's do the Twin Cities Underground Film Festival. And he's like, okay. How do we even do that? And I'm like, I don't know, but I'll figure it out, which is basically my motto. And so I decided to start a film festival, and I did. And we started taking entries, and the mission really seemed to speak to people. The, hey, have you been rejected from a lot of film festivals? Send us yours. If you've been rejected from a bunch, we'll give you a little extra look-see to see if we can maybe get you in something, give you a little cred. Because the thing you start realizing is, like anything, the more people you know, the more buzz your project gets, the more suddenly people start to glom onto it. This is an interesting lesson that comes back later in the story of my rise and fall as a filmmaker. Not that I've fallen very far or rose very far, but there's definitely an arc that I have recognized over time. And this was the first lesson in it. When people think you're successful and smell success, suddenly they want to be around you and hope that your success will rub off on them. This was the first inkling of it. Because as soon as we start doing this Twin Cities Underground Film Festival, and we start putting it together somewhat separately, the film had gotten so much good buzz that suddenly other film festivals wanted to show it. Where we started this film festival to have our own festival because so many festivals were ignoring us, suddenly all these festivals stopped ignoring us, so it became a little weird. Because it was like, yeah, this is that movie that we're showing because no one else will give it the time of day. But a lot of people are giving it the time of the day now, so ignore us. Anyway, so we started to do this Twin Cities Underground Film Festival, and we started putting it together. And of course, we had no idea what the hell we're doing. And while this was happening, because it started getting all this positive buzz, suddenly people wanted to show it everywhere, the actors in the film started noticing a little bit, and started reaching out to people they knew who own theaters or whatever. A good example being Justin Overlander, who played Jonathan and later Sheriff Elliot in Terror from Beneath the Earth. We played it in his hometown, which is a small town way out on the western edge of Minnesota. And we showed it at their like local little theater during their all school reunion, because he comes from such a small area that like they can't do a single school reunion. They have to get a bunch of the neighboring towns and all their schools to do one reunion, because otherwise it's not worth the money because they're so small. During that week, the local theater played the movie because, hey, this is what 95, 94 graduate Justin Overlander's up to. He was in a movie. Come see it. It's free. And so we get to play out there. So that's an example, right? And so the guy who played Sven, Scott Tolman, is originally from Wisconsin, close to Madison. He found out about a guy who was reopening the drive-in in Jefferson, Wisconsin, called the Highway 18. It had been shut for a long time, but a guy had bought it. It was a guy who had owned movie theaters, sit-down movie theaters in Illinois, and he wanted to open a drive-in because he was old school and really loved the drive-in and wanted his own drive-in. So he bought and fixed up the Highway 18 and was just in the process of really getting it back up and running. And Scott somehow came in contact with the guy and gave him a copy of The Monster of Phantom Lake. Mentioned he was in it and said that you could show it if you want. And the theater owner was like, okay, let me check it out. Well, he watched it and he loved it. And he was like, I would love to show this movie, because it supposedly takes place in the Mukwonago area of Wisconsin, which is a real place, not very far from Jefferson. The real Phantom Lake in Mukwonago is not very far from Jefferson, Wisconsin at all. Maybe a half hour's drive, maybe. And so he really wanted to show it. However, again, this is 2006. He did not have a digital projector. And in fact, I don't think any real drive-ins did, at least not in the Midwest. Maybe a couple out in California, but none in the Midwest. And a lot of drive-ins at the time were starting to go under because they couldn't afford to upgrade to digital, and all of Hollywood was going that way. He really liked the movie, and he got in touch with me and said he wanted to show it. He just didn't know how he was going to make it work, but he really wanted to show it. And he had this event that he does every year over the Labor Day holiday, where he does an all-nighter. and they show like five movies from dusk till dawn. And if you make it all the way to dawn, they give you breakfast. And he said, you know, I think this would be the perfect thing to throw in as movie number three. So we show two kids movies, then your movie, then a couple more adult movies, not adult like triple X movies, but just, you know, R-rated movies. I was over the moon. I mean, I grew up going to the drive-in all the time, all the time. And the thought of my cheesy monster movie, which was made to pay homage to the cheesy drive-in cinema of the 50s and 60s, to see it at a drive-in, to me, sounded like the greatest thing ever. But leading up to it, he even told me, he's like, look, I don't actually have a digital projector, so do you have a 35mm or even a 60mm print of it? And it's like, no. I shot it on a $3,500 camcorder, and it's only available on DVD. He's like, okay, well, let me run some tests. Same thing the guy who runs the height said, and I'll get back to you. And so he did. He ran some tests with a standalone projector, and he got back to me and said, I can make it work. Do you want to do it? And I was like, absolutely, let's do it. And so he schedules it for the Labor Day weekend for this dusk till dawn event. Here's the thing. Josh and I, before this was all scheduled, had already scheduled our film festival to be that same weekend. So here we are with this opportunity to see my movie at a drive-in, but I have to run a film festival. Well, what worked out was that the film festival was only supposed to be, I think it was Saturday and Sunday, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It wasn't long, right? But it worked out that the Dusk Till Dawn thing was on like that Sunday night leading into Labor Day. Here's the thing. Jefferson from the Twin Cities is 4+ hours, right? 4.5, almost 5 hours. But we realized if, after that final film ended, if we jumped in a car and zipped out to Jefferson, we would make it in time to see The Monster of Phantom Lake. And at the time, this is end of 2006. At the time, I was married, still am, but we only had Elliot, who was about to turn 4, and then Michael and Liz, who were like 14 and 16 at the time. What happened is that Stephanie's family is from Maquanago, Wisconsin, and her mom still lives there. So what she did is she went out there early to just go hang out with her mom while I was running this film festival. And Josh and I, because Josh wasn't going to miss this, we did the film fest back home and then hopped in the car and zipped our butts out there. And Steph went to the drive-in early to be there for when we got there. So we zipped out there straight through, and it was like raining and crappy, but we made it. And we got there, the second movie was already playing, and we got in there and we parked way up front. And here's the thing, just like the Heights Theater, the owner of the Highway 18 had to do some creative stuff to make it work because he had to project it digitally, and he'd never done this before, ever. What he did is he rented or got access to a digital projector, like a office projector, right? Not like a movie projector, but just like an office projector kind of thing, which at the time were starting to become a thing, but they were not super powerful, at least not necessarily powerful enough that you would project a movie on a 90-foot drive-in screen with it. But what he did is he put it in the back of a small hatchback car in the front row. And then he cordoned off all the cords and stuff. He had to run back to the booth for the sound and all the stuff. But he had it all worked out. Josh and I made it, coming off this long-ass weekend of working this film festival, which wasn't greatly attended, but it was fun. We'd get out there, we'd finish the stuff, we drove straight through and got there, and we were just like, we were out of it, right? Because we'd barely slept. We're just excited to be there, drove through some pretty bad weather to get there, and it was just crazy. And I get there, and of course, you know, when I saw Elliot and the kids and Steph and hung out with them for a while, and Steph's mom was there and the whole thing, because she hadn't seen the movie up till now. And so when the movie was playing, Josh and I went and sat in his car, and Steph was fine with that because she was in the car. She'd seen the movie. I think she was pretty much sleeping with Elliot on top of her in the front seat. The second movie ended. People were getting their concessions, getting ready for the third movie. So, you know, a bunch of cars left. But this is a big thing. People stay all night. So a lot of them stayed. I mean, there were a lot of people in that field. Josh and I were just like, holy crap, this is so cool. This is the coolest thing ever. We're also, you know, half asleep because we're so tired, but we're just like, this is great, running on caffeine. And the owner announces that this third movie is one you haven't heard of. It's actually an independent film made by a couple guys who are actually here tonight. This is their homage to the, you know, cheesy old monster movies, and we wanted to include it. We hope you like it. Be aware that we're projecting it out of the front of a car in the front row, so please don't walk in front of it. It might be a little bit dark, but we're doing the best we can. So go easy on it. Have fun. At this point, I'm just ready to crawl out of my skin. I'm so excited. And the projector powers up, and the movie starts. I had basically an out-of-body experience. Oh my God, that's my movie. On a drive-in screen. It's kind of dark and I'm having trouble seeing it at parts, but it's okay, because it's my movie. Not a lot of people left, which drive-ins, it's late. It was like 2 or 3 in the morning by the time it was over. But I mean, so it's late and, you know, people got to go. But we retained most of the audience. And you could hear people laughing in other cars, right? And it was clear people were into it. I turned to Joshua one point. I'm like, I think I literally said, this is the coolest thing I've ever experienced. This was even better than the damn premiere. This is amazing. That was like the pinnacle of everything I dreamt of at that point. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to make these cheesy old movies, right? I'm watching my movie, my monster come out of that stupid lake on a giant 90-foot screen. There have been very few times in my life when I've experienced ecstasy like that. It was indescribable. I think the feeling I felt when I first held Elliot, he'd just been born, I got to look at him. That's about equal to that. Something I created in the place where it begged to be seen. And so we watched the whole thing, and Josh and I had seen the movie a bunch. So at this point, we just kind of talked. We made jokes. We talked about things that, you know, didn't work. You know, we had a good time and talked. And I remember during that night, I said, you know, we should make another one. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, let's make another one. Let's make another movie kind of like this. Let's make another cheesy movie. And I'd already been thinking about it, but I don't think until at that point that I'd really discussed it with him or said flat out, let's make more. But I remember thinking, and I didn't say it out loud, but I remember thinking, watching that movie up there on that big screen, I remember thinking to myself, I never want to do anything else ever again. This is it. This is it. This is what I want to do. It was honestly tied for first greatest experience of my life. It was everything I'd ever really wanted, everything I'd been working toward, everything I dreamed of. And maybe to some it seems small, but it's like that was my moment of winning Olympic gold. You know, I didn't have to win an Oscar. I wanted that experience. I wanted my movie on a drive-in screen, my cheesy monster movie, where it should be seen. And I got it. And that's when real serious discussions of what's next started happening. That's when I said, you know, we should make another movie, and it should be another Professor Jackson movie, because I knew Josh would be in for that. And we should bring back the Kadoo Cops. We could bring some of the characters back and just tell a different story with the same characters. That right there was the moment when the Mimiverse, the universe of my films, was born, was sitting in Josh's car at that drive-in, cold and damp from the rain, watching the monster Phantom Lake. That's when this all really took off. Because, like I mentioned in an earlier episode, we had talked about the idea that we were going to make this movie, the monster Phantom Lake, we'd get 1,000 DVDs made, we'd have a premiere, and then 5 years later, we'd be sitting around joking that, ha-ha, remember that movie we made? Yeah, there's 800 copies of it in my garage. I tell that story all the time. I got it down. Well, I didn't have 800 copies left. I had like 100, maybe, after the movie was over. And this was the cherry on top of the amazing banana split that was this evening. The movie's over, and Josh and I are just like, that was amazing. And suddenly you heard it. Beep, beep, honk, honk, beep, 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 honk, honk, beep, 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 honk. The crowd was honking. Cars everywhere honking loud and cheering. And you could hear people clapping. And it was like, oh my God. Now, if you don't know what that means, a bunch of cars honking after a movie like that is basically the equivalent of a standing ovation. we got a drive-in standing ovation. And I was like, literally nothing about this night could be better. It was perfect. And we had people coming up to the car window and it was like, hey, you guys made the movie. Great job, guys. That was great. It was hilarious. And like, I remember one guy was like, he was listing off all the things he loved about it. He's like, and you did this and this. That was perfect, man. Great job. I don't think I've ever felt happier in my life than I ever had at that moment. And that's true. I mean, I was happy as hell when my kids were born, but there's also the part of you that's like, this is amazing. Also, crap, I have to raise them and make sure they're okay and they got to survive. And oh my God, they're going to be coming. You know, it's like the worries set in. What worries were there for this? You know, it was all just pure joy, pure happiness. I could live in that moment. If there's a heaven, it's that moment. That's my personal heaven because I was there. I was experiencing that joy. My family was there, you know, my best friend at the time was there sharing it with me. And you know, it was transcendent, honestly, out of body experience. It almost feels like it didn't happen. It was so great. Again, that was my Olympic gold. That was the moment. And that was the moment when all of this that you've enjoyed over the years, that's where it all really took off. That's where the seed got planted. And now this crazy tree in which I live, because I'm a crazy tree person, that's where it got planted. I will never forget it. I can't. And now you can't either, because now it's part of the oral history of the Mimiverse. And this is probably a good spot to stop. I realize I didn't really go too deep into this. And I said that this was one of two events that led to other things, but it starts getting into a very interesting place after this, because everything leading up to this point to there has been sheer perfection, but perfect doesn't last forever. And this is when things start getting weird and things start getting a little less clear. So I think that is the best spot to stop for this month. And next month we'll talk about what came next. And that of course leads into It Came From Another World and the long and winding road that gets us to now. This has been an oral history of the Mimiverse. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. Now it's time for episode 10 of Atomic Tales. I suppose without further ado, we'll just jump right into it. Let's do it. Stephen D. Sullivan and Saint Euphoria present Atomic Tales, stories of science, mystery, and excitement. This episode features the latest installment in our fantastic original series, Strange Invaders. Tonight, Agents 1, 2, and 7 get in over their heads while investigating strange cattle deaths out west in Mensect. Join us now as we present another in our continuing series of Atomic Tales. White-hot pain shot through me, and my pistol clattered to the messy lab floor as the scimitar-sized insect claw stabbed into my right shoulder.
Ray!
Agent 2 shouted, taking aim from where he lay on the paper-strewn concrete. The bug monster had decked him before stabbing me. Never mind me, I grunted, trying to pull away from the thing. Just shoot it! Ace hesitated, clearly thinking he couldn't blast it without nailing me, too. The creature was shaped like a man, but didn't look remotely human, aside from the white lab coat and ragged pants that draped its hideous form. A pair of bulbous, multifaceted bug eyes stared from its misshapen head. Its pincer mouth snapped hungrily, scant inches from my face. The thing's skin looked like armor, and its feet terminated in twin talons. One of its arms ended in a human-like hand, the other in a single long claw embedded in my shoulder. I lurched forward, butting my head into its ugly mug. Its mandibles gouged a scrape across my forehead, but the blow seemed to stun it, and I managed to pull myself out of the monster's grip. I staggered back, overturning a rack of metal shelves as I tried to stanch my shoulders bleeding with my other hand. Beakers smashed on the floor, spilling God only knows what chemicals. Two's automatic barked, the flare from its muzzle momentarily illuminating the dimly lit room, but the shot ricocheted off of the humanoid bug's armored carapace. The Mansect, there is no other word for this abomination, came at me, its deadly claw dripping with my blood. Bellevue, Colorado hadn't looked like a place where I might die when Agents 2, 7, and I arrived a few short hours ago.
Runway built for crop dusting, probably.
Agent 7 commented on our approach to the narrow airstrip nestled in the bucolic countryside.
Not much else.
2 added as he touched us down on the bumpy tarmac. The Bureau had a Dodge Power Wagon waiting for us, not the usual Studebaker.
Good thing I like you boys, because that front seat is pretty cozy for 3.
7 remarked.
Unless one of you wants to ride in the back.
She jangled the truck's keys as she said it.
Shotgun!
Agent 2 called. I didn't object. As Agent 1, I outranked them both, but I liked Ruthless Ruth Donlevy, and riding shoulder to shoulder with her was definitely not the worst thing in the world.
I'm gonna check on those unusual cattle deaths,
she announced as we got going. Drop us in town on your way, I said. Ace and I will talk to the locals, see if we can find out about the cattle, the saucer sightings.
All the usual stuff.
Agent 2, Buster Ace Freeman, concluded. 7 dropped us off and we chatted up the townsfolk. Bellevue isn't a big place, just a cluster of western-style buildings with some small outlying farms. With the recent mysterious cattle deaths, they were glad to have us federal agents around, though the locals remained wary. They were wary of both strangers and of each other. However, they were most suspicious of a local scientist, Dr. Vince Hedison, who'd lately become very secretive. Some folks even speculated that Hedison might be the weird figure seen sneaking through the nearby fields and around the edges of town at night. He'd come to Bellevue to help the locals with crop and livestock yields. At first, that had seemed to be working out. Now, people weren't so certain. Ruth was still out checking the cattle, but Hedison's place lay close enough for me and Agent 2 to hike to it. The scientist's house was an old two-story ranch with a newer barn-like metal structure at the rear. The front door hung open, banging in the dusty breeze. A faint, acrid odor raised the hair on the back of my neck.
Something smells funny,
2 confirmed. Dr. Hedison, I called as we entered. Are you home? Is everything okay? Getting no answer, we did a quick sweep of the house. The trappings of everyday life lay in disorganized heaps throughout. Eventually, we discovered a steel door at the back. To his lab, I'm thinking, I deduced. Ace nodded. In silent agreement, we both drew our guns. We knocked, but only a metallic echo replied. It's not locked, I noted. Let's take a look. The door creaked open, and we cautiously advanced into a cluttered laboratory, a big room lit only by scattered, dust-covered skylights. The equipment looked almost like the Terragon setup, seeming to have every piece of gear imaginable, as well as cages of numerous sizes and examining tables big enough for a horse or a slaughtered cow. Naturally, the light switch didn't work.
Dr. Hedison,
2 called.
You in here? U.S. Science Bureau, we need to talk to you.
Only a faint skittering sound gave us any warning of the attack. The pain in my wounded shoulder flared as the Mansect bore in on me, jaws clacking, scythe-like arm raised for the kill. I stumbled over the fallen shelving. I had nowhere left to retreat. 2's gun lit the semi-darkness once more. His shot found a vulnerable spot in the monster's left knee. The Mansect staggered but didn't go down. It turned on my partner. Ace fired again, and the monster chittered angrily as the shot bounced off its shoulder, missing the exposed joint. 2 backed up, taking better aim, but he misjudged the length of the thing's claw. It lashed out, whip-like, and sent him sprawling to the floor, unconscious. The Mansect turned toward me once more, greenish drool dripping from its clicking jaws. I gauged the distance to my fallen automatic. I can shoot left-handed, but I wasn't sure I could reach it. I ignored the pain in my shoulder and coiled every muscle in my body to try.
Hey, you!
A feminine voice called. My foe wheeled at the sound, just as Ruthless Ruth Donlevy tossed a beakerful of something into the Mansect's ugly face. The monster screeched as a cloud of broken glass and chemicals enveloped its bug-like head, I took a step toward Agent Seven and then staggered and fell, twitching to the ground. Seven grinned.
You guys all right?
Getting there, Ace moaned, staggering to his feet. Been better, I replied. As my fellow agents helped me up, I asked, what did you do to it, Ruth?
Chloroform. You boys should learn to read labels if you're gonna fight in a lab.
Wasn't our original plan,
Agent Two pointed out.
What is this thing?
Mansect, I managed to mumble. The world was starting to spin a little.
Good a name for it as any. Ace, tie it to that chair while I keep Ray from bleeding to death, would you?
Half an hour later, both the Mansect and I were coming around, and somebody had fixed the lights. The monster didn't look any handsomer now that we could see it clearly.
Dr. Hedison, I presume,
Agent Seven said. She'd found some notebooks after patching me up and had been paging through them.
You mean that guy's the doc?
Agent Two asked.
He's the one responsible for the dead cattle and the mysterious shadows that people have been seeing?
Looks like,
Ruth replied.
From what I can piece together, he was working on some kind of animal husbandry experiments and something went wrong. He might be responsible for a whole lot more, too.
My turn to be puzzled. What do you mean?
Remember how Doc Tarragon recently said that someone might be behind the giant insect invasion?
She shot a meaningful look at the Mansect.
Tarragon.
The inhuman voice of the creature made all three of us jump.
Help me.
The thing that had been Dr. Hedison chittered.
Antidote.
Is he saying there's a cure for this? I asked. Two quickly searched the notes again.
It looks like he was working on one, but he didn't have a chance to take it before his mutant insect nature asserted itself. Everybody look around.
Please, before too late.
We looked, still woozy. I had little luck. Anything? I asked.
A hell of a lot of honey,
Two replied. Food, maybe? I suggested.
Found it!
Seven exclaimed. As a field science specialist, Ruth probably had a better idea of what to look for. She returned with a syringe of yellow-green goop.
His insect-like hands would have made it hard to use this. Lucky it didn't break in the ruckus.
But will it work? I asked.
Must work.
The former Dr. Hedison insisted.
Please.
His inhuman body was shaking now, straining at his bonds, the insect part of him reasserting itself.
I'll have to inject it into a joint,
Ruth noted. It took a bit of work, but she managed it. Hedison's bug-like form shook even more, and an eerie wail escaped his pincer mouth. The ropes restraining him began to snap, one, and then another. And then suddenly, his whole body jerked, and he lay still. The three of us watched in awe as the insect parts of his physique melted away, revealing an emaciated human being underneath. Ruth checked his pulse.
Dead,
she announced sadly. The Tarragons are going to be mighty disappointed, I said. But maybe this is the end. If Hedison was behind the giant insects, maybe it's over. Maybe we can mop up whatever's left of the bugs and finally be done with it. Agent Seven looked thoughtfully at Hedison's notebooks, piled on a table nearby.
Maybe,
she said.
But I wouldn't count on it.
This has been an original story of Strange Invaders, part of our ongoing series of
Atomic Tales,
brought to you by Saint Euphoria Productions. Tonight's episode, Mansect, was written by Stephen D. Sullivan. It was produced, edited, and read by Christopher R. Mim, who played Agent 1, and featured Fred Goodrum as Agent 2, Buster Ace Freeman, Stephanie Mim as Agent 7, Ruthless Ruth Donlevy, and Michael Kaiser as Dr. Vince Hedison, the Mansect. Be sure to tune in next month for more Atomic Tales. Please support the films of Christopher R. Mim at SaintEuphoria.com and the work of Stephen D. Sullivan via his Patreon at PaySteve.com. Join the conversation at the Monster Conservancy at SaveMonsters.com. All elements of this episode are copyright 2021 by their creators and may not be reproduced or reused without permission. Atomic Tales and Strange Invaders are trademarks of Stephen D. Sullivan, all rights reserved. This is the Saint Euphoria Audiocast Network. Okay, good stuff all around. Thank you so much for listening this month. I'm going to get back to work, as if this recording and editing isn't work. It is, but I got to get back to all the other stuff going on to keep us on track for all the things that are happening and coming up. Please contribute to the latest film, The Phantom Lake Kids, in The Day the Earth Abruptly Almost Ended by going to SaintEuphoria.com. Also, check out The Phantom Lake Kids in The Beast Walks Among Us. It's available everywhere. Order it, watch it online, whatever, see it. You'll love it. I promise you will. Again, if you contributed or pre-ordered it and you haven't gotten your stuff, wait a little bit. And then if you still don't get it, contact me. If I get anything back to my P.O. box, I will contact you and we'll work it out to make sure you get it. Okay, that's it for me. Again, thank you for listening. Before I go, as I always say, be good. But if you can't do that, be good at it. Take care of each other. Be safe. I'll talk to you again next month.
It is I, Dr. Bob Tesla, with your Mimiverse Jokes of the Month. So, since we are still dealing with the coronavirus, I'm going to keep turning this into a pandemic instead of a pandemic, and talk about our favorite plague rats. What's the difference between a smart anti-vaxxer and Bigfoot? Bigfoot has been sighted. So the science community has figured out that the spread of coronavirus is based solely on two things: how dense the population is, and how dense the population is. Hopefully I won't have to keep telling these jokes month in and month out. Hopefully people start getting vaccinated and wearing their masks so we can be done with this already. After all, you don't want my puns to get worse. That said, tune into us on Twitch every Thursday at 6 p.m., where we play 4 tokens worth of classic video games. It's called 4 tokens. And then Fridays at 10, we have Cliffhanger Theater, where we are currently in the middle of 1937's Dick Tracy, which is a surprisingly good serial. Very good detective work, good action. I'm very surprised, because I've seen a lot of bad serials. And after each serial, we partner it with an educational film. This week's is Appreciating Our Parents. Until next month, believe in the science.